All right, I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Coming up, we'll tell you if the Raptors choked away the series last night, but we start today with the Western Conference Finals. I want to offer a warning to Damian Lillard and the Portland Trail Blazers before tonight's game two of the Western Conference Finals. There's a world of difference between Steph Curry's emotional maturity and Russell Westbrook's. This is important because Lillard and the Trailblazers think the same ball of anger and hate that unraveled Westbrook and allowed the Blazers to vanquish the Thunder will do the same thing to Steph and the Warriors. Dame wants another personal feud with a point guard he believes is overrated. This is what's at the root of the Blazers' very public rejection of head coach Terry Stotts' game plan of not blitzing Steph Curry in pick-and-roll situations. It's what was at the root of Portland's sloppy, low-energy performance in Game 1. Dame Lillard wants to beat up Steph Curry. Dame wants to prove he's better than Steph a teeny bit more than he wants to beat the Warriors. Make no mistake, Lillard has convinced himself that beating up Steph is the key to beating the Warriors. But that's not what his head coach believes, especially while Kevin Durant is sidelined with a calf injury. Let's take a listen to what Dame and Stotts said after Game 1.
We got to bring our guys up and run them off the line. And tonight we were, you know, they were setting solid screens and they coming off, you know, shooting practice shots. And, you know, that's the last thing we need if we want to have any chance to, you know, to beat this team.
You know, Houston had some success, you know, trapping Steph and really getting out on him. Is this sustainable for you guys to keep dropping the big so far?
I can't remember. When he had 33 in the second half, were they trapping then?
Yes.
They were? And he scored 33 in the second half?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we'll look at that.
All right, Lillard and Stotts clearly disagree. The Trailblazers have sided with their star point guard. Here's Mo Harkless's quote. I don't think there's any way Steph should come off a pick and roll and have a clean look. We don't get that. Dame don't get that. CJ McCollum don't get that. There's no way the best shooter in the game should get that. We've just got to make it a little tougher on them coming off those screens, not let them get clean looks. I'm sure Coach will make an adjustment. Stotts has already started his backpedal. He apologized to the reporter who asked the original question after Game 1 and acknowledged he's reconsidering his Curry strategy. Stotts is giving in to his players. He's going to let his players fight Steph Curry. It's better than risking another internal mutiny. It might be the only way to get the Blazers to play hard. Harkless said the Blazers have to tap into their anger, saying this: we were at our best against OKC because we didn't like them. We played mad. It's fool's gold. OKC is one of the dumbest teams in basketball. Golden State is one of the smartest. Steph Curry scored one basket in the fourth quarter of Game 1. The Trailblazers didn't get blown out because Steph scored 36 points. They lost because they spent the entire night pouting over the game plan. They lost because Lillard turned the ball over 7 times. They lost because they're too worried about Steph's stat sheet. Stotts wants poor defending big man Enes Kanter on the floor because he's a rebounding machine. Stotts thinks the way to beat up Golden State is on the backboards. Tonight is going to be fascinating. Portland's going to play Dame's way. Will that be a better strategy than their coach's plan? All right, joining the desk now, NBA champion Stephen Jackson, Fox Sports Radio host Doug Gottlieb. Marcellus, I will start with you. Mistake for Terry Stotts to let his emotional players dictate the game plan.
Absolutely not. Smart play right now. If you're in this moment going into Game 2, you saw that disengaged team go out there trying to fight through those screens up high, big man sagging, and they just look disinterested. So you know what? Coach is like, if you think I'm wrong, go out there in Game 2 and prove I'm wrong. I'll buy into what you guys need. As we are all taught collectively in sports, that effort is the greatest eraser. Like, okay, coach, I messed up. I was supposed to have the B gap. Oh, I was supposed to go out there and set the screen. But if I give you 100% effort, then that could make up for all my issues. So I think this is the game plan. Like, okay, I'll concede to you guys. Show me the effort. Let's see if we win.
This is the part of the year where coaches really take players' opinion on defense and offense, especially in these series games. And it's always done after Game 2 when you lose because
– after Game 1?
I mean, after Game 1, excuse me, after Game 1. Thanks for correcting me. Because players know what they did wrong in Game 1, and they out there going through it. Mm. And a lot of times coach put game plans together. And one thing I used to like about Coach and Don Nelson, when, before we practice the game plan, he come to his star players or the guys that's guarding the key guys, he come to them and ask them, what do you feel comfortable doing? What do y'all feel, how do y'all feel comfortable guarding this guy? And their opinion matters because the coach can see a lot of stuff from the sideline, but actually being out there guarding these guys and being in those coverages, the players have to be comfortable with them. I love the fact that he's not just being a stubborn coach and saying, we're going to do it my way or no way. I love the fact that he's taking the players' opinion and working with them on the game plan. But it's all for nothing. They still going to lose. I don't care what they do, what game plan they come up with, who opinion they take. The outcome going to be the same.
I mean, look, Jax, you nailed it, right? I mean, like, no, both the start and the end. I mean, it's important that, yes, you have to take, and this feels, it feels like the Trailblazers players before the game said, this ain't going to work.
It looked like it, too.
Right? It looked like it ain't going to work. And by the way, they're coming off of game 7 in altitude. Okay, they had no gas in the tank. They don't turn the ball over like that, right? So I don't think they're winning that game regardless because of the short turnaround with only one day in between game 7
What's
and game 1.
What's the right strategy?
I don't know because you got Enes Kanter who couldn't guard this chair that I'm sitting on, right? Yeah. You want to double with Enes Kanter? There's a reason. Like, Terry Stotts is not an idiot. There's a reason that Enes Kanter is not their starting big guy. Right. Anthony Slater, who asked the question, he actually wrote an article before the series began saying, can Enes Kanter even play in the series because there's nowhere to hide him
defensively, right?
It's a different matchup. Well, I think this actually is the best possible way to get the Portland Trailblazers to play above their level and play angry, play mad. Mm-hmm. Warriors play with joy. You got to play with anger, and hopefully you just get some superhuman effort from Damian Lillard.
Is he not right, though? Is Stotts not? Steph Curry's 36 points didn't beat him.
You're right, and Terry Stotts is right, but whatever the translation was, it did not go through to Damian Lillard because he looks like he's out of gas because of the Oklahoma City series. He was 3-17 in game 7. But I think Terry Stotts' strategy is actually a good one. Like, he wants to go for 40, fine. Let's cut off everybody else. They only have one other dude in the court who can score.
Houston didn't trap him, though. In that fourth quarter, Houston didn't trap him. You see, they switched everything. So it wasn't trapping in Houston when he got those points. So they need to try it because they weren't trapping him in the fourth quarter.
And you need to try because in the sixth game, Steph Curry shot 27% from three against Houston. So beating up Steph Curry is something that you need to go out there and try, especially if your players are engaged in that. And to call it emotional, to call it anything but just an assessment. And there have been many a times I've sat in the game room watching film on a Monday after a game, and coach is like, my bad. I'm like, coach, you didn't say that on Sunday in front of 80,000 and for millions
right,
of
notes. Exactly.
But now you're bad.
Exactly. Yeah. Now,
so sometimes as players make mistakes, let's call out a coach when he makes a mistake. And I like the fact that he's taking it back.
And some of it is also Lillard was getting trapped at the other end.
They're not good defenders. It doesn't make it like Damian Lillard is Tony Allen now.
No, he's not.
He's not a good defender.
Damian Lillard is not overrated. He is properly rated. He's an all-star, okay, but he's not as good a defender as some of the elite point guards are. And he's not a great finisher. He's not as good a creator. He's slightly a lesser player than Steph Curry. He has the ability to look better than Russell Westbrook. There are things he does well and things he doesn't do well. But let's also remember, the makeup of this team is totally different than Houston. Houston has a bunch of like-sized dudes. They are solely built to beat the Golden State Warriors.
Yes.
And they almost did it.
Right.
That's not how Portland's beat. Portland has two scoring guards.
Good point.
And they try and put shooting all around it. It's a completely different construct of team. So the idea that they're going to do to Golden State what Houston was able to do, that's not looking at your personnel correctly.
Let's go to this level then. Is Dame Lillard too caught up in a personal battle with Steph Curry? Is that driving Portland? Is he caught up in a personal feud?
No, not at all. I don't see any of that. This is not OKC. This is not Westbrook who called out Dame Lillard before. So that's why it got personal. You talking about me begging to get in the All-Star game. Oh, we got smoke. You talk about Steph and you talk about Dame, that's respect. They talk to each other after the games, everything. What he's saying is, look, and I know what we're doing. We're marrying the fact that, one is a properly rated superstar and another guy is starving for that same attention. But he's talking about an assessment, X's and O's. He's talking about on the court. Let's try.
You don't think.
Let's try what worked against him just in the last
You don't think Dame season. Lillard.
He wants to beat everybody.
Doesn't have a little doll of Steph Curry right now. he's obsessed with
that light skin.
Playing in the Western Conference as a point guard. If you don't have a chip on your shoulder, you're going to slide right to the bottom of the Western Conference. He should have a chip on his shoulder. And when he plays like that, he plays well. Look how he did Russ. He destroys guys. You have to take that
charge. You don't
think
it can get too personal, though?
It can get too personal, but not in the playoffs. Regular season, maybe. You have to have that chip on the shoulder in the playoffs. You have to have that kill mentality in the playoffs against everybody. He's approaching it right.
Yeah, hey, are you guys familiar? Damian Lillard's from Oakland.
Yes.
Brookfield.
Yeah. Jerome Bettis is from Detroit, too, and Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard. But honestly, I actually think that kind of plays into it. Like, look, you're playing for my team in my town, and they love you and cheer for you more than they cheer for me.
Yeah.
I do think this is very much personal. And it's a hard balance, right? He has to carry this team, and he has to play angry, but you can't play too angry. Right. I kind of agree with you, Jace, that you can't.
No.
You can't make it. Look,
you can't play too angry.
Against Steph and Golden State.
When I play too angry, it hurt me.
Okay,
it
hurt me. Can. Okay.
But hold on. Yeah.
Some people can't.
You know why it hurts? There's a magic kind of level there, right?
It's a balancing act, because if it's too personal, then you're not disciplined.
On your focus, right?
Yes. You're not disciplined. Guess what?
Seven turnovers.
Okay, seven turnovers. Now, his first game having seven turnovers. What you did see is his discipline to the game plan, which I know was killing him. If it was too personal, I would have bucked the game plan and got after him.
A little bit. So when they're setting that high ball screen, you can't just let him keep going over the top. He goes over one way, he can't come back, and that's where Lillard kind of got exposed. Mm. Yes, you have a guy sitting down there and help. You don't have to get screened 50 times up there. Just make it one time and don't let him. So he wasn't actually as disciplined to the game plan. He didn't stay attached like he should have. And I think it frustrated him, because normally when you go over the top, there's a trap. Meanwhile, at the other end, they're taking the ball out of his hands and his own teammates couldn't make plays. And I think he played a little bit too angry, a little bit too frustrated, and they're blaming the game plan. And Terry Stotts is doing what good coaches do. He's like, hey, that's my bad. Let's try and figure something out. But he knows he's got a bad matchup.
He probably forgot the Warriors was that good. Maybe they forgot how good the Warriors were.
But Marcellus, I think I won't put words in other people's mouths, but Portland's effort was not there in game one.
Agreed.
And that's when Terry Stotts, and he's not saying it, but he's like, no, y'all really didn't try it my way. No. Y'all did it under protest and didn't give me best effort.
I'm glad you said under protest. Yeah. We've all been there before. Yeah. If the producers on this show right now tell you, we're like, I need you to stay still and look in the camera one and don't move. You'd be like, I can't talk. Or you would do it without not a lot of interest. I think we saw that. Okay, you want me to go fight the screen? I'm going to fight it the same exact way. Is this textbook enough for you, Coach Stotts? What's going to happen in this game is, with that concession to your players, you've engaged them. You gave them the fuel to go out there and do what they want to do. We'll see how it plays.
And another thing we're seeing, well, we haven't seen through Portland, we've seen two different teams in the playoffs. We've seen Dame lead the team first round. Mm. We've seen CJ lead the second time. Mm. Normally during the season, they both on the same page, both leading the team. We haven't seen that yet. So hopefully they can come together this series and play as a team, because they haven't played as a team in the playoffs yet.
And the Warriors haven't even charged up the Death Star, right?
And they don't have KD.
KD's sitting over there going like, man, I might not even have to come back and play, let alone DeMarcus Cousins might be able to play. They're not even charging up the Death Star, and they're still taking him out.
You may have to help me on this, because I'm going solely off the top of my head and memory. But I don't want to compare Dame Lillard and Steph Curry to this. But Wilt Chamberlain used to get all jacked up trying to play Bill Russell because he couldn't stand Bill Russell and all the winning and the way the media lauded over Bill Russell. And it affected them when they would play each other one-on-one. And I'm telling you, what worked against Russell Westbrook, because he's a meathead, it doesn't work against
KG
Steph Curry.
And Tim Duncan. Perfect example. I'm agreeing with you. Okay. KG and Tim Duncan. KG used to get so worked up and try to punk Tim Duncan and bow him and all that, and it never worked.
But this is not new evidence. Dame Lillard didn't have a great series by his standards going against Denver last year. So let's just be real. Like, it's not just Steph landed and all of a sudden Dame Lillard got inefficient. To Coach Stotts' credit, we're down six.
No. But here's all I'm saying about Lillard, though. It's not about his individual play.
Oh, okay.
These guys believe in Dame Lillard.
Yes.
He is Avon Barksdale. Yes. And everybody falls in line.
And he's so hyper-focused on winning the one-on-one battle.
And so when he's not happy.
And showing he's a tough guy.
Nobody's happy. Yeah.
And look, and Steph has this way of just of having fun, of almost making you feel, he's not clowning Damian Lillard, but it makes it feel, he hits a fall-away jump shot from third, like anyone else, it's a bad shot, he makes it, and he starts shimmying, and it gets you mad. Is he clowning me? Like, no, that's just how he plays, but it never affects Steph. He always plays at that kind of same happy, joyous level.
Oh, wait a minute, now we're going too far.
Yeah.
We have not seen Steph Curry sulk on the court? Oh, yes, we have. We've seen him. We've seen bad
game three in Houston.
Mouthpiece and a ref.
Yeah,
but LeBron swatting the dunk.
But we've also, if you go back to when they played Portland, this was 2 years ago, and remember Steph missed a couple games because of injury, came back, drops 40, right? It's one of those, I'm sure if you're Damian Lillard, you're like, again with this dude? Really? Like, in my town, should have been my team.
Get off my block.
Everybody likes him, and I want to show him, and I'm trying to be tougher than him, and that's not who Damian Lillard is.
Dame still wants to win this series more than he wants to beat Steph. Let me tell you why. Because he had a bad series last series, and he gave all the props to McCullough for holding him down. So I don't think it's to that point. He wants to win, but also he wants to play well. I agree with that.
Hey, guys. Jason Whitlock here. Thank you for listening to the Speak for Yourself podcast. If you like what you hear, then you should take a minute to check out the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast hosted by The Herd's very own Joy Taylor. On the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast, you'll tap into a different take on the world of sports. Joy will break down all the biggest stories from the NFL, NBA, culture, in and out of sports, and everything in between. So subscribe now for a weekly episode of Maybe I'm Crazy every Tuesday night on your favorite podcast platform. Now back to the show. Whitlock and Wiley, Stephen Jackson is back. We're joined now by Fox Sports NBA analyst Katino Mobley. Time now for a big story. Sponsored by the all-new 2020 Kia Telluride, give it everything. Let's move to Milwaukee, where the Bucks stormed back from a double-digit deficit last night to take game one from the Raptors. Milwaukee got a career night from Brook Lopez, who had 29 points and led a scoring barrage in the fourth quarter that Toronto just couldn't handle. In fact, the Raptors had a 7-point lead going into the final quarter and then disappeared down the stretch, with Kyle Lowry the only Raptor making a field goal for the entire quarter. The question here is, did the Raptors choke away the series last night? I'm not convinced. And I listened to Charles Barkley afterwards say that the series is over, Milwaukee's the best team. I just don't expect Brook Lopez to have another 29-point game, and I don't expect the whole Toronto team besides Kyle Lowry to disappear in another quarter like that.
Oh, it's not over. It gave me confidence. I thought that Toronto was going to lose the series going into it. Watched them in game one, started to have renewed confidence in them. They did waste a game from Kyle Lowry, especially a game one.
Yeah, man.
Kyle Lowry, this playoff season, 0 points in game one, first series, 9 in the second. Did you get 30?
I know you was like, Cat. I hope Cat ain't right, because I just said Kyle
that.
Come live.
Yeah,
come
say that. We laughed at it. Yeah. We laughed at you, too.
But who expected Lopez to go out there and do that?
Nobody.
29 points when you talk about a guy who
was... He averaged 5 last series.
Scoreless his last game. So he wasn't even in the game plan defensively. Like, let him go. And he went off. So I think this is going to be a real series. We probably see 7 out of this.
You can't expect a 7-footer that has a house on Disney lot to come for 30 every game in the playoffs. So I'm sorry. That's the last thing I was expecting.
He in La La Land?
Last thing I was expecting. His brother like Godzilla, so I don't know what they got going on. Two big kids. But... For Kawhi, for the most part, you have to trust your teammates. He had so much success in the last series. Even though he had success, his shooting percentage was terrible.
Terrible.
You can't shoot 37 shots like he did in game 7.
39
and you have 41 points. Right. Like, that's terrible.
Yeah.
He has to trust his teammates. I think the biggest thing last night was Giannis trusted his teammates. Kawhi had a lot of plays where he had Danny Green open. He had other guys open that they needed to make shots. He didn't pass the ball. They ended up being turnovers or they ended up getting blocked. Giannis made the right passes all night. Now, when Lowry gets 30 points, it's kind of scary now because they should win when he play like that.
Yes.
There's no way. But the only room I'm giving them is they can come back and win because Giannis said before game one, there's no way we're going to lose this game one at our place like we did against Boston and win this series. So they was focused on game one. They might lose a little bit focused game two.
Yeah, and you know, there's a couple of different things for me. Kawhi not playing consistently during the regular season, I think is showing, is it affecting him and his team down in the postseason? Because they're force feeding him offensively, and he's already amazing on defense. But when, like Steven, like you said, when you're shooting 39 times in one game and 26 times, that's not who Kawhi Leonard is. So I think, like you said, Steven, he needs to make his teammates better. Mm-hmm. When you get a game that you get from Kyle Lowry, 30 points, you should win the game on the road.
Easy.
But I like your point, Katino, about he's not prepared for this playoff role because he didn't put the work in the regular season.
He didn't. He hasn't played a consistent 10 games straight in the regular season. So when you're playing in the playoffs, it's more physical.
Yes.
You're traveling. The team loads up on you more. The opposing team loads up on you more. And then now you're taking volume shots. His conditioning and the way his outlook in the game is totally different from a regular season to come to the playoffs. So that's what it's showing to me. So if he doesn't adjust like Giannis did against Boston the first game when he had the scheme when Boston walled him in, if he doesn't adjust, it's going to be an early season series for them.
Each round changes. You know, each round teams do different things.
Yep.
First round, everybody on Toronto team was able to get off.
Yep.
Second round, it was only Kawhi. They locked everything else. Well, now you have to use your whole team. This is the Western Conference Finals. I mean, East Conference Finals. So you have to lock in and use your whole team. That's the only way you win these games.
And he was more one-on-one against
and
Philly
Bud know that
than he is against.
Budenholzer knows him better than anybody. He coached him in San Antonio. So he know Kawhi want to come in here and shoot all the balls and be super aggressive. We're going to let him do that and take away.
Maybe he's saying, I'll let you go. Maybe he's saying, I know you so well. I dare you to pass that ball.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about a physical conditioning. Maybe you're not ready for this moment in terms of your lung capacity and you're getting fatigued. How about mental conditioning and the fact that, one, this is not the model I play under, and now you're asking me to play it, and you know why I'm accepting that baton and that responsibility? This is why I'm here.
Right.
The Rosen's gone. Mm-hmm. I'm here for this moment to lead this team beyond what the expectations have been in the past, right? So maybe Kawhi is just taking on too much, which is just caving into the pressure. He should just go back to his model. Kyle Lowry shows up like that, maybe they'll have a better situation.
But Marcellus, in football, we always say fatigue makes cowards.
Of all men.
And so,
Of all men.
And again, I'm not calling Kawhi a coward by any stretch.
Right.
But he was tired.
Mm-hmm.
And in the fourth quarter, gave them nothing. They went into that fourth quarter with a 7-point lead.
Right.
Kyle Lowry put in work in the fourth quarter as well. I think 5 of 7 from the field. If they had gotten anything from
just
Kawhi.
Just a little bit.
2 points and no field goals from Kawhi.
And look, when it was about a minute and a half to go, they were only down one.
Mm-hmm.
They were only a possession or two away, but he just didn't have it. And we've been through this situation before. I'm pretty sure you've been through this situation where you need that one tackle or we need that free throw. And you're like, you know what? I didn't give you the first, second, and third. I am gone.
Check engine light.
I seen Hakeem Olajuwon with the oxygen mask on in Denver. I ain't got no more, young fella.
But hey, at the end of the game, Danny Green had a big turnover. And I know why Danny.
Oh, that was horrible.
But you know why he had that turnover? Because he didn't touch the ball all game. Mm-hmm. So now you're giving the ball, we call it the grenade. They throw him the grenade, 5-4-3-2-1. He tried to make a play.
I know
at
exactly
the crucial
you're
part
talking
of a game,
on
and
the
he gets
left
picked.
Side. Yes, they advanced the ball to him.
Yes.
And I said that was a wrong move. And
they
no
missed him. They
Danny,
missed him 4 or 5 times before
that. But I
think
it's a wrong move because situational basketball, you control the ball, I control the ball in our career. Danny Green is not that
guy. A ball
guy.
Handler, exactly.
It's not a ball handler. For them to give him the ball, that was a mental brain fart, whoever gave him the ball.
But he was trying to make a play and do something he doesn't normally do because he wasn't touching the ball. They missed him all up. He's a three-point shooter.
Yep.
He was open 4 or 5 times before that play, if you look
and
at
Kawhi
it. When he got the ball, he tried to do something that he wasn't normally, that he doesn't normally do, and he turned the ball over in a big part of the game.
Whitlock and Wiley, joined now by Fox NFL analyst Mark Slareth. Let's move to the NFL, where the Jets have plunged themselves into some drama this week. After firing their general manager yesterday, a report surfaced that Adam Gase butted heads with the front office because he didn't want to sign Le'Veon Bell. Well, Le'Veon responded and actually took the high road, tweeting, quote, "There's been a bunch of false reports and speculation about me in the past, about things I've said and done, so I'm used to this. I don't jump to the conclusions when I hear or see a story that may affect me. Even if reports are true, that won't stop me from doing what I came here to do. Everyone has a job to do, and I'm going to do mine. Whether people like me or not, I'm here to win football games." Le'Veon Bell taking the high road and saying the right thing.
Wow.
That does not convince me, though, that there won't be problems between he and Adam Gase. Just because Adam Gase thinks he's overvalued. Adam Gase has a lot of power, and I could see Adam Gase, between now and the trading deadline, moving Le'Veon Bell.
Mm, wow. I don't see it that way. I see all the pressure now on Adam Gase to overcorrect this situation and to give in to whatever Le'Veon Bell would need. It's not about the words in the article or speculation about Adam Gase and the power trip. It's about numbers. And Le'Veon Bell knows I average 25 touches a game. So this article is not going to get me caught off guard. People have lied on me my entire career, so I understand they may be lying on you. It's about the numbers. When we get out there in September, game one, I don't care about the article, good, bad, ugly. If I don't get 25 touches around there, oh, Adam Gase, well, you don't like Le'Veon Bell? Why are you not using your workhorse? Game two, I don't get around 25 touches. So all the pressures, the light is on Adam Gase. Le'Veon Bell could just sit back, see how it plays out.
I look at this situation, and I think, you know, I understand I don't want to spend all that money on a running back, right? I understand you button heads with the organization. I understand you came from an organization that you thought was completely dysfunctional, and you want to be empowered, okay? Because there's a difference between appointing and empowering a head coach, right? Mm-hmm. So now you have that power. Here's the deal. Adam Gase, last year I did a Miami game. I think they're 79% in 11 personnel, meaning three wide receivers, one back, one tight end. And they want to run the wide zone handoff game. Remember Jay Adaye going, last time they went to the playoffs, he had 1,000-plus yards. And like, this is a perfect scenario for Le'Veon Bell. Wide zone, the most patient runner I've ever seen. Like, getting out there, taking his time, hitting it back, getting the cut back. Like, this could be a perfect match. Mm-hmm. I understand not wanting to pay a guy. I understand wanting to set your culture. But he is an extremely gifted player. And in that system, I think he could be great. Also, catching the ball in the backfield, motioning out, designating whether you're in man or zone, all those things. That, to me, is a perfect player, a perfect match.
Y'all are looking at X's and O's and numbers. I believe Adam Gase is looking at what you talked about yesterday, Mark. He came from what he believed was a clown show culture.
Correct.
He thinks you can't win in the AFC East against Bill Belichick with a clown show culture. And I think he thinks Le'Veon Bell is part of the clown culture. And again, even though he hasn't worked with him in the past, we just gave him a bunch of money,
right,
and he won't even show up for voluntary workouts. I'm not saying Adam Gase is right. I'm talking about what he believes.
So he's already overcorrecting, because there's no evidence other than he didn't show up to voluntary workouts where Tom Brady and others with the Patriots don't show up for voluntary workouts. I'm not just saying, if you're going to do it that way.
Sat out all last season, Marcel.
He sat out all last season, but where did you sign on to? What level was it? Was it lowercase, uppercase? You signed on to some part of this Le'Veon Bell. I can't believe that he just sat there and said, I do not want any parts of Le'Veon
Bell.
At
that price, yeah, that goes on all the time. Disagreements from coaches and front offices about who they should sign, who they should invest in. And I'm sure Adam Gase, right or wrong, is preaching culture.
Mm-hmm.
And this is factual. I do believe Le'Veon Bell helps you immensely on Sundays. He is not a part of a healthy culture, though. Period.
Monday through Saturday.
No, he's not. And I don't think I think Adam Gase, like the New York Giants, just went through with Odell Beckham Jr., gave him the money, and then said, you know what, we're gonna swallow it and we're gonna move him because we can't get the culture we want here with him here. I think Gase could make the same decision about Le'Veon Bell.
You can't make it until you both come together, you both have an agreement, you're both there, and you decide what kind of player you want to be. What kind of, do you want to add to the culture, or you want to take away from the culture? Because remember, like, he's coming from Pittsburgh, and all I know is that when he sat out, there was a point where everybody was supportive, and then there was a point where everybody turned their back on him. And mm-hmm. He came from a culture that was bad. So for Adam Gase, you've got to come together with one of the most talented players on the planet.
He won't come to New York for the meeting.
I get that, but there's a lot of guys that don't work out. And now, the way the league is structured, there's a lot of guys that don't want to be around the facility. So there is a lot of this that goes on. And we as players, we're guilty, but we as players, that's what we negotiate, because we can't negotiate anything, right? We have no backbone. We have no staying power. So what happens to us is, like, at the end of the day, right, we can't get any of the money, we can't get the insurance, we can't get the guaranteed contract, so what do we negotiate? All right, well, we're not coming to practice. Like, that's what we negotiate. So we did it to ourselves, and now you can't be mad at guys for going, oh, wait a minute, that's all voluntary, and I got my own guru that I work out with, and you're paying me, you know, $14.5 million a year, I'm going to stay right where I'm at, I'm going to work out with my guru.
And I would take it here. Look, if Adam Gase is coming from a dysfunctional culture, we talk about Le'Veon leaving Pittsburgh and that culture, well, then, what therapists always tell you, if you want to really reach somebody, meet them where they are. So, Adam Gase, wherever you are, and you're the person of authority and power, Meet Le'Veon where he is. Instead of isolating him, that's not going to build a culture. Isolating your best player, saying, you know what, without him, or I'm going to act passively, aggressively in a way that I'm going to isolate the guy. I think you should just meet Le'Veon where he is. Take the inputs, take the contribution, and try to minimize the fact that he's not there like everyone.
All right, welcome back. Yes. Whitlock and Wiley. My earpiece is very loud right now. All right, Steven Jackson and Katito Mobley are back. Time to get antisocial. Darnell Smith, our social media manager.
Hey, family. Football.
Speak for yourself.
Oh, yeah, what's happening?
Right.
What's
cracking? Yes, sir. We're going to start with my man, Joel Embiid, who's been trending all over social media for crying after the Sixers Game 7 loss to the Raptors. But he seems to be in good spirits about it because last night, he posted to Instagram, wrapping up the 76ers season, and called himself the Crying Wolf. Then he went over to Twitter and changed his avatar to a picture of him crying. Look, I think this was a smart move to embrace all the trolling, but I want to ask you guys, do you like it Embiid embracing his crying on social media?
Now, you troll everybody else, you got to troll yourself.
Yep.
Man, preach.
Right. It's only right. It's only right. He got to.
I love it, too. It means he's back. Whatever he was going through and crying on the girlfriend. I've had to be a girl. I got engaged 4 times, so I know. Even if you ain't
four times,
four times.
You watched Uncle Jimmy.
Well, hey,
but I married the fourth one.
Different seasons, different reasons. I didn't let you get caught. That's in forever. That's eternal.
I guess for me at first, you know, I love it. And there's a book called Cry Like a Man by Jason Wilson, and I think everybody should read it. And it's about emotional incarceration. And I think him, you know, reaching out.
I don't believe in
and
crying.
You don't? Yeah, right. We'll not be crying all the time.
You cry in The Sopranos when Whitney died.
Yeah, you cry when Tiger won the first round.
That's right.
He ain't married.
Now, that ain't crying. Now, that's different now.
We're not single. No. We'd like to cry. You don't want to cry.
Moving on to Zion Williamson. After the Pelicans won the first pick of the draft, a video service online showing Zion's reaction, which then triggered stories that Zion wasn't happy about the possibility of playing in New Orleans, that he might even consider going back to Duke for another season. Well, earlier today, Zion's stepfather was on a Baton Rouge radio show and stated that Zion is excited about the prospect of getting down there and getting settled in New Orleans, and added that returning to Duke isn't something that we have even considered. Guys, are you buying that Zion's excited to play for New Orleans?
Hell yeah. Somebody done told him about that gumbo and that
and Willie Mays.
Yeah, and that good time you can have down in New Orleans.
And that Popeye sponsorship that's coming.
Man, I'm trying to tell you.
New Orleans is like the Las Vegas of the South.
Yes, I agree. I agree. And the food is the best in the world.
It's dirty, though. It's nasty.
Oh, it's dirty. It's dirty, but
what
they ain't number seasoned.
What color is the ground?
They ain't number seasoned.
That syrup on the floor.
Ain't number seasoned.
New Orleans. We be seasoned. My Air Force Ones. I've been going down here.
New Orleans is a great city. New Orleans is a great city.
No.
Smells a little funny.
No, it ain't. It ain't.
Smells a little funny. It's
hella
it has
good.
Its history. It has its great history.
Yeah, it ain't got
everybody's different.
It ain't got its presence and future, though. Nah.
It's presence and future.
And most times when you hear stepfather, we don't respect that. We don't respect when we hear that. We don't think that's a reliable source. In this situation, they real close. And if his stepfather's saying they cool with it, I'm pretty sure we got to go with it.
Right. X!
All right, moving on to Brook Lopez, who had a monster game in the Bucks' win against the Raptors last night, finishing with 29 points and 11 rebounds. After the game, Lopez's nickname was trending on Twitter, and some people consider it one of the greatest nicknames of all time, Splash Mountain.
Oh.
Apparently, Lopez is such a huge fan of Disney that he even owns a home on the Disney World Resort property that is decked out in Disney memorabilia. Social media absolutely loves the nickname, even made jokes about how Disney should rename Splash Mountain to Brook Lopez. Guys, do you like the nickname?
Yo, they just
not after one game.
They just big kids.
Not after one game. You can't be a splash nothing after one game.
Ain't
okay?
No splash.
You can't be the splash.
Not even a drip.
You can be a drizzle mountain or something like that. But you ain't part of the splash. But drizzle I know he light skinned. No.
What'd you say to somebody? Did you spit on me? That's somebody.
Gleek?
That's it.
He's a gleek mountain.
That's it. That's it. Splash mountain.
I like the nickname.
You like it?
Yeah.
It's too early for it though.
It's a little early, but I like it.
It's a little early.
Yeah, I like it too. It's just too early.
I don't get it though.
Yeah,
I
splash
he's
mountain.
A mountain.
He's tall and
splash
he can shoot.
Brother. He's the mountain
range.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I took
no.
It
weird. No. No, that's one of these. No.
No. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't like it for that
that's
reason.
That's a Chris
Paul for that reason.
Next.
All right, guys, let's move to the ice, where a controversial goal went unnoticed as the Sharks beat the Blues 5-4 in overtime. A Sharks player had a hand pass that led to a game-winning goal.
Oh,
and since the NHL's video review process doesn't include hand passes that lead to goals, the Sharks were victorious and the Blues were pissed. in an official statement, the NHL said, plays of this nature are not reviewable. A hand pass that goes into the net can be reviewed, but a hand pass between teammates cannot be reviewed. Is this more proof that replay should just go away?
Yes. Replay doesn't make things perfect. It just highlights the imperfections.
Great point. Imperfect humans are still in charge of replay, which means it's not going to be perfect, and the rules can't cover every single play. Thankfully, this was a 2-1 series now, so they still got games to play. You could go out there and try and erase it, but messed up.
I just hate when you pick and choose when you need to use it. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing. So you might as well throw it away. Replay should be everything should be replayed in any sport in the last 2 minutes. Everything. Mm. So if you're not going to be consistent with the replays, then right, throw it away.
What about a 2-on-1, though? I got a hand pass. Don't review
it. It ain't 2 minutes.
Okay. See, but now we got a problem.
Yeah.
You gonna be on this? We going to be on this?
Yeah, you got to throw it out because, I mean, everything is imperfect, right? Yeah. If you start thinking about it too much, there's too many cans of worms, you're going to start opening up.
Yep.
Mm. All right. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Take it away.
Sorry, Stat.
Whoa.
I'm gonna start beatboxing doing this part right here.
All right, y'all. So Aisha Curry's back in the headlines. An article came out recently about her life working as a mom. She went on to talk about raising her daughters and embracing her community and had an interesting quote saying, "My own community needs to embrace everyone better. Sometimes I feel like I'm too black for the white community, but I'm not black enough for my own community." There are mixed reactions online, but I want to hear your guys' thoughts on this.
Well, I think that obviously Steph and Aisha have made a decision that Aisha is going to be a public figure and a conversation driver. Mm. She wants to be a media personality. And so she's going to talk about things that are true to her. And obviously this is an issue in the black community. I'm sure she is going through it. It's unfortunate that we do this to ourselves, but what I just find the dynamic interesting is that, to me, I think clearly Steph is comfortable with his wife wanting to be in the middle of national conversations all the time. That's an interesting decision.
That is. A little good cop, bad cop. Steph has the perfect image, and Aisha's going to be the one out there poking at society, sometimes with good cause. Here's what I would say, because I know where she's coming from. But one, let me remind everyone, there is no president of the black community, so there is selective perception. Mm-hmm. Who are you listening to when you say black community?
Right.
There are some people who believe that you are just fine as you are, and there are some people going to question you no matter who you are. Mm-hmm. So it's just based on who are you listening to. Basically, she's telling on herself she's listening to the wrong people, because they're going to call you out no matter which way it goes.
Yeah, and that's how I look at it, too. I got to agree with you now. Who is she talking to? Like, who is she getting her confirmation from?
Right.
Like, it should be from yourself first. Mm. Like,
and your family.
And your family. But it's money don't make you happy, but it's frustrating to see her in such a great position and so insecure. Like, I don't understand that. Like, you married to one of the best players ever. You're a beautiful woman, a great mother. Like, you have everything going. I don't see how she's insecure about anything. Mm. Like, I think that's something that she has to look at in the mirror, because nobody can make you feel comfortable about yourself but you. And I think for her to have all these situations, it's something that insecure she's dealing with. And it's trickling to outside to make it seem like it's more issues.
Well, I don't think it was negative. And I mean, out of all of us, I have mixed children. And Miles loves you, Stephen. Yep. And you guys see Miles and Sam. So at times, my children are like, you know, I look more like mommy, meaning their skin color, opposed to like daddy, where daddy's browner or black or whatever it is. And they don't understand at this moment. So for her to put that out there, I think that's nothing wrong with that. And when she does come out there, whether it's, you know, wanting attention from DMs or whatever, I don't really think, she's just being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And in her situation, she's from Canada. She's not from America.
Yeah.
So when she did come over here, being American or Americanized, like Eddie Murphy said, was right? You go get the African woman, she don't understand no English, and then keep her in the house. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a joke. But seriously, when you start to become Americanized, there's a lot more things that put in front of your face faster than it was if you were in Canada.
My wife is Canadian, and she talks about identifying with the same thing. I said, I'm from Compton. I identify with the same thing, too. I wasn't gangster enough. Mm-hmm. I wasn't cool enough. I wasn't hard enough. Black people sometimes like, why are you trying to study? So I heard it, and guess what? I started to listen to people say, no, keep going, brother. And it was black people who also told me, you find the way you are. There is no limit to the expressions of any culture, especially the black culture. That's why I say there ain't no president. Right. Somebody right. gonna call you out no matter which way it goes.
But it's good for her to speak out about it, because my children, I have to explain to them every single day who to, you know, who's the hero, who's the leaders, what's this, what's that. So they have to go from the white side to the black side to the...
But I also teach my children, too, that you have to love yourself first.
Preach.
You know what I mean? And you only gonna be as successful as you want to be. Everything starts with you.
Right.
Your insecurity, we all have insecurities, but you can deal with everything when you deal with yourself first. And I think that's what
And
she
maybe
has
she
to
did
understand.
Get love from her family.
Maybe.
Right? Maybe
but,
she
but,
did.
But Stephen, what about that? What if she is confident and the way of her expressing her confidence is by showing her vulnerability.
Right.
And the reason why she can be so, let me tell you what the things I'm dealing with.
By being transparent.
By being very transparent. Because she is, as Catino says, there are some kids that's like, they can relate to exactly what she's saying and want to be able to say, oh, okay, well, Steph Curry's wife, Aisha, deals with this exact same issue. And they can relate to it and opens up a conversation. And so I'm not so sure that she's insecure. I just think she's made a calculated decision. She's going to be a public figure. Yeah. And a you know, I don't know if she wants to be a polarizing one, but she's going to be a polarizing public figure.
But the thing that is unsettling for me, because you're correct in what you're saying, is that, one, it really is an admission that others are defining you. One, even in your own community. Like, that's too far. Like, I'm not raising my kids about listen to the noise. I'm raising their filters so they could drown out that noise.
Exactly.
One. And two, there's not a single black person I know, if we're going to keep this just what she's saying, that went unscathed in terms of criticism towards their blackness. Like, success at times is getting poked at in terms of, is that black enough? Affluence, like everything. You move to the suburbs. Like,
you can go too far the other way.
You go too ghetto.
Too ghetto. Yeah. Right. So I know you've heard that statement.
Right. A million times. Why you just a million times?
But Marcellus, I'll just... There's a process for every human being getting to the point where it's like, this is who I am.
Real.
Damn what you
love it or leave
right, but that like
and
you said,
there's a process.
And that process, that's her helping everyone else.
Yeah.
She's helping people out there that are insecure or literally doubting themselves when these situations come up. So whether it's being the thought in the DM or whatever it is, I don't know, or this situation, she's just voicing because she has the platform to do so.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, welcome back with Lock and Wiley. Mark Slareth is back with us. Let's move to the NFL draft. Sponsored by Capital One, what's in your wallet? After Tuesday's highly entertaining NBA draft lottery, it looks like the NFL wants to get in on the action, with the NFL's draft officials' Twitter account taking up the issue yesterday, tweeting, quote, "Hey, NFL, we want a draft lottery too." All right, this sounds like prisoner of the moment to me, but... Should the NFL want to have a draft lottery and all the excitement? Who's picking number one?
Hell yeah. I'm hooked. I'm a prisoner of the moment, but that NBA draft lottery, it was special this year. We saw the ratings boost, obviously, the intrigue. If it solves the problem, obviously, of trying to prevent tanking. So there's a lot of theories out there. Mike Florio has a couple of good ones as well about how you can say the teams that don't make it to the postseason, how you can weigh it towards the latter part of the season to make sure you're not trying to tank. I like that. But this TV show that they're trying to create, Another Day of Football, has to change the archaic method of ping pong balls. Like, all this evolution in technology, we still using some air pressurized ping pong ball chamber. I don't believe in that. I think that gives fuel to the conspiracy theorists out there. So if we could fix that mechanism and the optics of that, I'm all in with this.
What needs to be fixed about the draft? Like, the NFL draft, did you see the ratings of the NFL draft versus the NBA playoffs? it was probably tenfold on the NFL draft. And the NFL draft is just fine. Like, are you, the NFL, They're going to put a draft lottery. Then they'll just own every month of the year. Like, they already go in offseason. They already own everything, right?
Yes.
They do. I don't. The other thing about draft lottery, you get all excited about one. As much as you get excited about one, for every Andrew Luck, there's a Ryan Leaf, there's a, you know, Jamarcus Russell, there's a, it, you got 22 starters, you got 53 guys. One guy, unless he's, you know, the greatest quarterback of all time,
it doesn't matter with the NFL draft, though, Stink. Look at, here's what they're trying to capitalize off of. They just had the draft in Nashville. And they turned that into a three-day party. That was a Mardi Gras for the NFL.
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh, can we add a fourth day to this
Thank
somehow?
Thank you.
And that's what we do in America.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We just start expand. Hey, can we have two Super Bowls?
Yeah.
So right. It's like, okay, well, this doesn't require a lot. All we need is a few ping pong balls and a television camera.
Yeah.
And we got a show.
Yeah,
and we got an event.
Coachella used to be a camper and just a speaker.
Yeah.
And they were like, whoa, you mean we can open this up, this whole field?
So it's smart to extract another day, especially when you have the evidence to support that it will be
good. What point do the other sports just tap out? Do they just, are they waving the flag going, okay, you got us? I mean, Daytona 500 moved their date, right? Because the NFL pushed their stuff back. Like everybody just has to, well, I mean, now you're going to have you already have the schedule release. We do shows on schedule release for crying out loud.
We do.
I mean,
more is merrier.
And I will, your point is right in terms of the NBA has something nice. Let them have it. Why do you got, oh, they got something. We can do it better. Let us do it. Fat pigs get slaughtered. And it's just going to create probably just a little more jealousy of the NFL. That's what drives a lot of the negative stories about the NFL. It's just jealousy. Mm. They're tired of them owning every piece of the television landscape. And again, an NFL draft, it would work. It would just be another reason for an NFL party and to celebrate football. It would work. I'm not sure if it's, again, I agree with you, Steve. It's not needed or necessary.
You know when they should do it, though, right? They should do it early, before the season ends, on Christmas Day, to trump the NBA. Kind of, that's the kickoff. That's the kickoff. Like, that's the kickoff of the NBA season to me, right? Yeah. Christmas Day is the kickoff. No, we got the NFL draft lottery on Christmas Day.
That's so good. Oh, that would
blow it up. That would blow it up. All right, let's move to Cleveland, where Odell Beckham's Odell Beckham's time as a Browns OTAs ended almost as soon as it began, with the star receiver taking off after just one day practicing with the team. Yesterday, first-year head coach Freddie Kitchens had to deal with questions about Odell's departure.
I've never disputed the fact that it's not important for him to be here, but it's also important for him to be mentally ready to be here. All right, so I'm not giving him an out by any stretch of the imagination. Nobody here knows the conversations that Odell and I have. I'm just saying it's better for him to be here when he can present his best self, emotionally, physically, everything.
You know, when I heard that clip, it reminded me of my mother when my parents divorced and my mother took on a second job to get me and my brother up out of the hood. And I can remember her employer saying, Miss Whitlocker, are you mentally ready to come to work today? So I feel so sorry for Odell. He's not mentally ready to come to football practice and earn that $17, $18 million they're giving him this year. Odell's got it so hard.
Man.
I hope he gets mentally ready because, you know, my mother went through this with raising two boys on her own. I'm glad Western Electric and Kroger Grocery Store, they waited for my mother to be mentally ready to show up to work.
Man, you ain't right. I felt the same exact way. And I felt worse for this first-year new head coach, Freddie Kitchens, than I did for Odell, because that is a horrible way to support, respond to the media about your star player. There's a different way to do this. Take media training, brother. You don't say that your star player needs to get mentally ready. You say he needs to prepare on his terms because he's been great doing that. And that just gives all this smoke and criticism away. But instead, Freddie just walked right into it and stepped in it. So this is a scorching, bold, bright red flag, and it's not really Odell. This is status quo for him. It's not for Freddie Kitchens.
Yeah, but I think the thing is you're compiling all this talent, the Cleveland Browns, all this talent and all these expectations, and you want to put that all together. And his perception is, my guy's not mentally dialed into being in Cleveland. And why Like, why is that? Listen, do you want to be iconic from a football standpoint? Because you're one of the greatest talents we have in this league. Mm-hmm. But do you want to be iconic from a football standpoint, or do you want to be a social media influencer? Like, what do you want to be? Because I will tell you, the guy who dies with the most Instagram followers still is dead. That's exactly what happens to him. He's dead. So, you know, Peyton Manning is the most iconic pitch man in the history of this league. How did he do it? By being tremendous for 9 or 10 years in one of the smallest markets there is, Indianapolis. And he has exploded on the scene. So you've got to decide what it is you're trying to accomplish. Do you want your legacy to be one of the greatest receivers we've ever seen play the game? Or do you just want to be popular? Like, which is it?
But unfair, because his way of getting prepared hasn't changed, but his location and where he's going to play has changed. So now the natural assumption is he's not happy going there. Look, when, especially when you're traded or drafted, I wasn't ready to, mentally to go to Buffalo, but guess what? I showed up, and I showed up when necessary, showed up when needed. This guy right now I think is getting a little raw deal because of how it's being perceived, but the reality has been the same. When you show up in New York, everybody's like, yeah, who wouldn't want to be in New York? When you show up in Cleveland, people are going to say, oh, you forced them to be in Cleveland. It's just, there's no winning for him in this situation.
Look, I think Odell Beckham is extremely talented, but mentally weak. Boom. Bottom line. And that's what Freddie Kitchens is basically saying. He had a conversation with Odell where Odell made it clear he's not mentally ready to be here. And the reason why that just lands so terribly with me, and if people are trying to understand why y'all think I'm crazy, I'm just telling you, man, it's because I was the way I was raised, man. My father worked until his deathbed. Mm-hmm. We fought over, hey, man, come up out of this nightclub. Come up, you can't do it. It's too stressful. You're still carrying a gun, blah, blah, blah. We fought tooth and nail, but you were not going to get my father not to go to work. You wasn't going to get my mother not to show up at work and take care of her babies. And this dude can't show up for some voluntary football practice. He's not mentally ready. That it just lands horribly with me and other people.
But that's the difference.
He's not mentally strong.
The reason I wouldn't be so adamant is, one, you heard that, you saw that, you witnessed that, you experienced that with your family dynamic. This is someone's perception of a conversation or their relay of a conversation where I didn't hear Odell say that. And mentally weak or not, whatever you want to assess him, and I don't call him mentally weak, doing what he does on that field, it takes some strength upstairs between the ears. You don't roll out of bed, say I'm not here and I'm fragile, but I can do that. So there's something being lost in translation between what Freddie Kitchens, first-time head coach, I wouldn't give him that much equity and respect. Like, coach, you may have said something and spoke out of turn. I don't know, but I'm still going to side with the guy who's giving me evidence that he's on the all-time great path.
Let me ask you this, because there is winning. I think you show up and you lead your team and you guys respond to a 7-9 season and all the talent you have. There is equity in that. There is winning in that. If you go out and show it and lead by example, I would ask you this. Was Odell not the one that said, you know, we're gonna make this the new New England Patriots?
Yeah.
Did he not say that?
He said it.
Who? We? Like, you and the turd in your pocket? When are you going to get to, like, what we? What, you ain't there? Like, what we is that? Like, I mean, I'm like, if you're gonna say, hey, man, we're going to win multiple championships and we're going to be great, guess what? The we, that means us collectively, not the we, you guys over there, and me over here doing whatever it is I'm doing at the Met Gala.
Okay, like now
that
now
to me.
You forced me in a devil's advocate role more so than what I truly feel.
All right.
But there is evidence of other teams, even the Patriots, where we are not there. Like, you know, Tom Brady has missed multiple voluntary workouts.
After 16 years and multiple MVPs and Pro Bowls and world championships,
I understand where you're coming from, but let's not act like we haven't been on teams before. And we were in the league when none of this even existed. And there still was a
Super Bowl. Hey, Joe Gibbs, you know what Joe Gibbs used to say to us? Like, you don't have to be a part of the offseason program, and you don't have to live here in Washington. You don't have to. Unless, of course, you want to make this team. That was the word on the street when I played for, and Joe Gibbs having to win 3 world championships with 3 different quarterbacks.
And look, I'm going to say this just like, you know, with Tom Brady, we keep throwing out, he's earned the right. He's won the championships. This is a brand new situation Odell's in.
True.
Give him year one.
Yeah.
Let him establish the culture. Help your first-year head coach, your second-year quarterback, your new situation. Help that get the ball rolling. And then next year, do your little diva stuff or whatever. But I'm just, it just doesn't land right with me, man. I take a lot of pride in showing up today. Whitlock and Wiley, Steven Jackson and Catino Mobley are back. Let's move to the Warriors, who were hoping to have Kevin Durant back at some point during the Western Conference Finals, but could have a bit longer, according to Ramona Shelbourne. Durant's not close to returning to action, and our good friend Rick Bucher says it could be 3 to 6 weeks before he's able to play. Question is here, can the Warriors win a title without Durant?
Yes. Yes, they can. You should be concerned because obviously that's your nitro button. You know, we hit this, we got KD. We went from being a team that lost to LeBron up 3-1 without KD, then we beat them 4-0-4-1. We need KD, right? That helps. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of confidence in their system and the way that they play without KD. So concerned, but it's a luxury sometimes, not a necessity.
They can win the championship without KD today because LeBron's not in Eastern Conference.
Right.
Ooh. Ooh.
Giannis is.
He's not LeBron. Ooh. Giannis is not LeBron. But me personally, I think they need KD going forward. They can win a championship, but they need KD because the East is not what it used to be the last couple of years with having LeBron in the East. That's a different Eastern Conference.
It is.
With the Warriors team now without KD, they can go over there and win a championship.
You don't think
right now.
This Milwaukee team's better than last year's Cleveland team?
They're not better than last year's Golden State team.
No, I know, but it's a more formidable opponent than what Cleveland was last year.
Nah, because LeBron's not on the court.
Mm-hmm.
The takeover.
LeBron on the court changes everything.
Yeah, there's a couple of things for me. Steven touched on it. LeBron James is on the West. He's sitting at home watching playoffs. And second is, can Milwaukee dominate Golden State enough? No, I don't think so.
Four games and seven?
I just don't think so because Stephen Curry's a different beast. Klay Thompson's a different beast. And now they're getting their rhythm, it's going to be a lot more dangerous for them.
And the 75% KD is better than a lot of people on Milwaukee team.
Look, it's going to be a long wait. That calf, I don't expect him to play this series.
No, he shouldn't.
And I don't think he'd be 100% in the finals. And so we're just throwing out the possibility. No KD, and y'all still think they win the title.
A no KD Golden State.
It'll be harder.
Be a number one team in the Eastern Conference.
It'll be harder.
It'll
be harder. And like he said, he touched on this yesterday. Some teams lose before they even get on the court.
Mm-hmm.
So Milwaukee, yes, you may have your highs or whatever it is when you get to the finals, if you get there, when you get there, Milwaukee. But you're still going to be thinking about the babyface assassin and all those other guys on the opposite side. Like, so Milwaukee, when you were down against Toronto, you can't be down at home against Golden State thinking you're going to come back and win.
And once again, it's proven that they can win without KD. They won a championship without him. So it's proven they can do it. It's not the same bench. Yeah. Not the same team.
Look at the numbers. 31-4, Steph without KD. Call it when you want, regular season, playoff, whatever. Offensive rating, better. Defense rating, better. Like, somehow, some way, even when Steve Kerr was out, they didn't lose a game when the coach was like, this is a culture that has been frozen and it's almost.
What was that, 40-some game, 20-some, 30-some game?
Yeah, Luke Walton, that's how he got his job. Like,
I hate to go all this far off in hypothetical land, and I hate to circle back to yesterday again. Y'all, they could win without KD. That doesn't say something about the value he brings.
No, it says something about the Eastern Conference, how weak it is.
Yeah.
That's what it's saying.
Suppressing.
Everybody needs KD. Let me say this.
Yeah.
Everybody would love to have KD.
Everybody
needs KD. Let me say that. But with the way the Eastern Conference is now, not having LeBron in the Eastern Conference, just to be honest, it has changed. Mm. And that's why Kawhi was so happy to go over there.
Jason, you said this before.
I can be at the top.
Jason, you said this before with me. KD is a luxury. On great teams, he's just a luxury. He's not a necessity, right? So a lot of teams are loading up with three guys, or whatever it is. Having KD, yes, your road to the championship makes it easier, but you can still win it without KD.
We saw it yesterday.
And so again, we're going back to yesterday's conversation again, but And I believe Kevin Durant's the best player in the league today.
Yep.
I believe that. I wouldn't want to be on a team that could win without me. I'm just sorry. If I'm the best player, I don't want to be on a team that can win without
me. Well, that's what I spoke. That's what I spoke about with KD. I love KD. I think KD's the most talented offensive player ever to play. That's what I think. That's just my opinion. But I want, for me, like not the asterisk, but I would like to see him lead his own team more than just being on a Golden State team that can win without you.
And that's just credit. That's just you giving him props saying you're that good.
That's, you're that good.
You can go somewhere else.
You can do something else. Exactly.
But we know that you're that good that you can do it on your
own
team. But y'all need to stop because one.
I want him to stay at Golden State.
Man, boy, stop. Yeah, I'm staying there because, you know, by that thought logic, is that thinking is Kareem. Lakers won without you when you got hurt. Guess what? You shouldn't want to be on the Lakers. Like, Magic took over. Like, Kareem
that
should
run that wasn't a series. That was a game.
I was just saying.
Yeah, that's a game.
Whatever you want to call it.
That wasn't a series.
It's
going to
be a few games.
No,
but you know, what game it was, though?
Game six.
To win it.
To win it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to let that go, though. You know what?
Let that go.
And I got one more thing. I mean, social media.
Which Jay said.
All right. None of us is as smart as all of us. That's the beauty of social media.
Right.
The wisdom of the crowd.
Right.
We got to stop saying asterisk up here because.
No,
they
I said.
They're coming at my head, man.
No, they're coming at me.
You can see,
they coming at me hard. And that's not what I mean.
Don't put an asterisk on him.
No, the asterisk. Asterisk. Yeah.
I had to get it out, man.
That's not what I mean.
Enough is enough.
Enough is enough.
Throwing the towel.
God, I'm not going to put the asterisk conversation back into play. But...
Come on, man. We're friends, right?
Uncle Jimmy's here. Uncle Jimmy, your thoughts on the show so far?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to just do what I'm supposed to do and get straight to the big dummy of the day. Big dummy of the day is the person that was afraid to correct Steven Jackson for saying the word and Ketino Mobley. For saying it. What's that word that you had to correct him on?
Asterisk.
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 Hey, Markelish, thank you for having the guts to correct him.
I know.
Big Dummy was afraid to. I guess he thought Steven Jackson would put them hands on him since he's from Indiana.
Yeah.
All right. Here's a highlight from our discussion earlier.
Oh, man.
About Damian Lillard.
Nap time.
Asterisk.
Dame Lillard wants to beat up Steph Curry. Dame wants to prove he's better than Steph. A teeny bit more than he wants to beat the Warriors.
This is not Westbrook who called out Dame Lillard before, so that's why it got personal. You talking about me begging to get in the All-Star game. Oh, we got smoke. You talk about Steph and you talk about Dame? That's respect.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right, Uncle Jimmy. You have any thoughts on Dame Lillard? What's your take?
I most definitely do. Yeah. I'm loving this one here. Hey, man, this is nothing more than T'Challa versus Killmonger. From Black Panther.
T'Challa.
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 Yeah.
And Killmonger. Put an asterisk next to it. Okay. Let me explain this to y'all, man. Hey, man, look. This is a simple case. If you ain't never seen it, let me break it down for you. This is a case of a suburban kid versus an inner city kid. Mm. A kid with two parents versus a kid with single parent. Good critic versus bad critic. In other words, I'm talking about light skin versus dark skin.
Oh, man.
Okay?
Right.
All right. See, let me explain.
Hold on. Who's Killmonger?
Killmonger, that's Dame Lillard.
Oh, I knew that.
He's from Oakland.
And T'Challa is Steph Curry.
T'Challa's Steph Curry.
All right, go ahead.
See, Killmonger is from Oakland. Dame Lillard from Oakland. He about that life. Y'all think Russell Westbrook was about that life for them rolling 60s.
Man, calm down.
Hey, bro. Hey. Word on the street is, if Dame Lillard don't fit Steph up with a two-piece tonight, or at least come up with a flagrant one, he can't come back to Oakland. Hey, man, I'm gonna be honest with y'all. I'm gonna tell y'all what. Hey, man, Dame thinks Steph a punk, bro. You know, man, that Dame got all them tattoos and whatnot. Mm. He don't know Steph Curry with them hands. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He think just cause he that little pretty light skin, he don't know Steph will tack him up. You know, Dame got all these tattoos. Steph got one tattoo right here. Say mom.
Say mom.
You know what I kind of like this because Steph was born into royalty.
This is all I'm saying. Look here, man. Hold on. Look here. Let me break this down real quick. If Coach Terry would have just let Damon Lillard do what he wanted to do the first night, just go in there and fight the first time, they might have a chance tonight. Because they be sitting in the locker room, eyes all swollen up, lip busted. They be sitting, and the coach could go in there and say, all right, we tried this your way. Now let's do it my way.
Right.
Yeah.
See, which brings me back to Black Panther. Okay? Because remember, see, here's what coach got to understand. Terry, this is about culture right here. You're going to have to let these boys fight. Mm. In Black Panther, remember, they had to let Killmonger.
Yeah.
And T'Challa fight. Okay? And remember, now that they was fighting and they was getting a little worried because, you know, Killmonger's putting them hands on it. And finally, the brother had to speak up and say, no, let them fight. See, that's what Terry Stotts should have did. Terry, you got to let these boys fight. They say fighting don't never solve nothing. Not in this case. This is about a culture. It's about a way of life. Look here, man. Tonight at the end of this game, Killmonger going to look bad. Dame going to get hurt. He going to look over the edge like this, and he going to be like, hey, bury me in the ocean with Russell Westbrook, Joel Embiid, or Patrick Peterson, or Patrick Beverly.
Patrick Peterson, too soon. Stupid.
Hey, anything is better than sitting here continuously getting my ass kicked by these light-skinned individuals in Golden State. Please, take me. Give us free.
All right. Not bad. I like the Black Panther.
I love it.
Uncle Jimmy Killmonger there with. Yeah.
But Michael B. Jordan wore a shirt in the movie.
Oh, he did.
But his body didn't look as good as mine.
Oh man.
Let me get to my approval rating. Mm. Dame Lillard, I got him down to a 67. He's played poorly. I've dropped him 10 points in job performance.
I hear that.
Kept him the same in all-time greatness.
Yeah.
Character dropped him a couple points. He wants to fight. I don't like fighting. Mm. Moved him up in authenticity, though. He's keeping it real. 67 right now going into tonight's game.
Yeah.
Sometimes fighting's a necessary evil.
I got him at 66, one down. Look at that job performance. Had to drop him, obviously.
Yeah.
Authenticity. Called coach all the way out, not halfway, so I had to drop you there. But what you got him at, 11 all-time status? Half of a great player? You said he half of the greats?
No. Look, there's a big difference between him and Isaiah Thomas.